Alan Mundy. Alan, he had an album come out this summer entitled Bright Monday. It's Alan on banjo and Billy Bright on mandolin. Now, Billy plays with a band more often than not, other things too, but Wooden Wire, fine bluegrass band. They did an album of nothing but bluegrass and mandolin duets, and it's phenomenal. I play it a lot on this program, if you've listened. I play a lot of Alan Mundy music generally anyway. Get comfortable and listen to Alan. He tells great stories about Bill Keith. We recorded this earlier this week because of Alan's schedule, so I kind of know what's going to happen. Talks about Bill Keith, the inspiration that Bill provided to all players, including Alan, and how that occurred, and the award that he was gracious enough to ask Alan to present. And then the brand new Bright Monday. This is good stuff. Alan Mundy, one of my all-time favorite people, and, you know, if I could play a banjo, I'd play like Alan Mundy. I'm really happy to have back to Unreal Bluegrass, one of my favorite people, my all-time favorite banjo player. I say that everywhere I go, so it's no surprise. Alan Mundy's on the line. How you doing, Alan?
I'm doing great, Steve. It's real good to be here with you again.
I'm always thrilled to talk to you. You sent me this great album in the summer, this Bright Monday collection. I want to talk about that. That's you and Billy Bright. I want to talk a little bit about the story of you guys playing together. And before we do that, if you wouldn't mind just taking it back sequentially, a couple weeks, I guess, ago Thursday, you were at IBMA in Raleigh, and you had, I think, a distinct pleasure of giving a special award to Bill Keith. And I thought it would be neat to talk about, you know, what led up to you. How did you prepare to talk about that? What did you say? And your evaluation of Bill's importance, because we know it's great, but I'd like to hear you talk about that for a minute.
Well, you know, I began playing back in the early 60s, and it wasn't long after I was playing, and I heard Bill Monroe's recording of Devil's Dream on the radio, actually, and had never heard banjo playing like that before, certainly, and so I didn't know who it was at the time, and was always real intrigued with it, so... You know, as a kid, you search out people who know. You found out it was this banjo player named Bill Keith. So, Bill, I've been knowing of his music since that time, since the early 60s, whenever that Devil's Dream came out. And over the years, doing workshops and actually playing festivals more than anything, finally got to meet him and play some music with him and hang out with him. And over the years, I've done quite a number of workshops that he was on the faculty. And this last couple, 3 years ago, I think it was, Bill Evans organized a sort of a banjo extravaganza in the Northern California area. And it was Bill Evans and Bill Keith and me. And Bill and I stayed together in a house they had for us for the whole time. So in addition to all the other times I'd met him and been around him and hung out with him, I had plenty of time to hang out and just visit with him. I had my car. I drove to all the places we needed to be. We went out and got food early in the morning at a Denny's and hung out. So I got to know him even better then, and have always been a big, huge admirer of his music making on the banjo. And going way back to the Devil's Dream era, my good friend in college was a fiddle player named Byron Burline.
Oh, yeah.
And Byron had recorded with the Dillards, which was a huge deal to me. I love the Dillards and Doug Dillard's banjo playing. And Byron and his dad went to the Newport Folk Festival, and I'm going to say it was 1964, but it could have been 63, I can't remember. At that time, he met Bill Monroe and Bill Keith and came back, and through his connections, people would send him live recordings of Bill Monroe, and a lot of it had Bill Keith on the banjo, and Byron would share those with me, and it was just real... startling experience. And Eddie Shelton, who was my banjo mentor, he and I would stay up late with the tape recorder playing just little short phrases of Bill Keith's banjo playing, trying to decipher what was going on. So, spent a lot of time listening to him, spent a lot of time hanging out with him, watching him play, and hearing him talk. And if anybody's ever been in one of his workshops, he's a wizard at explaining music and music theory and how it works and all the interlocking pieces there are in music and how you access them and rearrange them to make music. So, I've been a big fan and hopefully a good friend of Bill's for many years now. And when it was announced or when he was told that he was going to receive the Distinguished Achievement Award, he called me and asked me to be the presenter of the award, which was hugely flattering to me to be able to do that. And I spent some time on the phone with him, making sure I had everything right and all the important things that he wanted to cover. I researched, online and through some books that I've gotten over the years that are about melodic banjo and Bill Keith and Neil Rosenberg's book on bluegrass, just to, make sure I had a good sense of the background and everything, and wrote it up as briefly and importantly as I could. And that was my presentation at the awards show. And Bill had pre-approved everything and thought it would do the trick. And his wife, who I'd never met until the event at the IBMA, wrote me some really, really nice emails to say how much she liked it and thought it would cover all the important things in 5 or 7 minutes, whatever time length I had to do that. So I was real thrilled to do it, and it came out well, and I was real nervous while I was doing it, and I just tried to keep my eyes down on the page and not stumble over words or anything. So
for people listening, Alan, I get just from people like you, and I've gotten to know Bill now also, but I know the influence that he had. But for the people listening, and they may recognize Bill's name, they certainly recognize Alan Mundy and your playing, but what was the breaking, what was different that made you stay up late and try to figure out these little things that Bill was doing? Not the detail that Bill would give us, because we would be in a circle of this whirlpool for a while, which is great. What was it in your ear that sounded so different that he was doing?
Right. Well, prior to Bill, basically, it was, and I don't mean to exclude anybody, but Earl Scruggs' approach was the big influence on banjo players, I believe, and even on Bill. Bill, as a youth up there in Boston, learned Earl Scruggs' solos note for note, and not only learned them, but wrote them out. And his transcriptions of Earl Scruggs' playing is what appears in the first edition of the Earl Scruggs book.
Yeah.
And Bill was very, very important in that book, in that he did all the tablature. He checked it all with Earl. And he even recorded and coached Earl through the instruction record that is on, that came with that early, or you could buy separately,
yeah,
I should say.
Which is still to this day, Alan, one of my favorite things to listen to, because you hear Earl describing these in this real droll Earl Scruggs manner. I just laugh at it every time.
Well, Bill was telling me that he would coach him through the roles and tell him, because Earl, I guess, my sense of it is, really didn't have a conception of the patterns that he used being organized into roles. So that Bill sort of said, here's this role here, just do this one on open strings, and Earl would do it, and I guess Bill would correct him if he didn't quite get it to match what was written in the instruction. So Earl had to, be disciplined about it, and Bill had to coach him through all that. So that you know, is the first part of his importance, is just sort of codifying Earl Scruggs' playing in a way that we could all get it, rather than just pick it good
right.
or something like
yeah,
that,
yeah.
To intellectualize it. So that was a big thing. But then the thing as a player that he did is he, I won't say he invented it, but he sort of discovered it on his own, this idea of string crossing, of playing, being able to play a scale on the banjo where you play no two notes in a row of the scale on the same string or with the same finger of your picking hand, so that you could fluidly play scales very fast rather than, say, the Don Reno single string approach, more like a guitar player would play a scale.
Yeah.
And so it had a little more fluidity about it because each string was allowed to ring as longer than if it were plucked and then released. So it had a, I guess, fluidity to it, bell-like
yeah.
sense where the notes rang over each other. So it sounded real fluid and smooth and everything. So after you discover that you can play scales, then tunes, melodies to these fiddle tunes are just that. You know, they're scales jumbled up in a lot of different ways. And the big difference between Earl Scruggs and Bill Keith's approach is that Earl Scruggs was more an approach that allowed you to play songs that people sing. So song melodies.
Okay.
So many times in a song, you would only have two or three melody notes per measure. Where in a fiddle tune, you might have eighth notes in the measure. And to be able to do that, you've got to be able to play a scale real quickly. So Bill sort of developed that and worked out a bunch of tunes. The earliest one that I heard, certainly, was Devil's Dream.
Right.
And then he also did Sailor's Hornpipe, Blackberry Blossom, and throughout his career, a number of other fiddle tune things. And I picked up real strongly on that because where I lived in Oklahoma, there weren't so many banjo players, but there were a lot of fiddle players,
yeah.
including Byron, who I hung out with. And I wanted to be able to play those tunes, Fisher's Hornpipe, Arkansas Traveler, Durang's Hornpipe, Sally Johnson, Gray Eagle, you know, Dusty Miller. I wanted to play all those tunes, too, on the banjo. And prior to Bill Keith, I didn't myself wasn't able to figure out how to do that, where with Bill Keith sort of showing us how one could do that, then all of a sudden all those tunes became available to me to play. And over the years, I've recorded many, many what are commonly called fiddle tunes.
Yeah.
And really enjoy playing them and have a good time. So Bill Keith gave that to the whole world. Plus, he also had a different concept of the role and the timing of it and just the intricacy of it, the nuances of the role. So if you listen to his playing, especially with Bill Monroe on those live recordings, which there now some of them are available on maybe Folkways
yeah.
or Smithsonian.
Smithsonian, I mean. I've got a couple on there, yeah. Brad,
yeah
where he introduces Brad Keith.
right, he's Brad Keith. And that was because, you know, a lot of people said, Monroe said, there can't be two Bills in the band. And Bill Keith explains it. It wasn't, you know, sort of, there can't be two Bills. It was just that it would be confusing.
Yeah.
So let's call you Brad, and that way I'll be Bill, and you can be Brad, and they won't confuse us. So anyway, if you listen to those recordings, Bill Keith's solos, even on the songs, have his really strong imprint on them with how he uses the role to create the solos that he does. Even though they're not entirely melodic, there's those elements are in there. So he sort of blended, you know, the Scruggs roles and the melodic style and then his own idea of roles and left-hand positions and how you get notes and what kind of things you can add to it. So the timing of it came out real interestingly, in a way different than Earl Scruggs. So he not only did the melodic thing, but he also added a whole new level of role approaches that people were available to players now. And if you look at Monroe and his music, and if you listen to the banjo playing before Bill Keith and then after Bill Keith, you'll find that all the banjo players that came after Bill Keith not only played the Earl Scruggs approach, but they also did, the Bill Keith approach. Yeah. If you listen to Dick Jordan, who came after.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big.
He was a straight-ahead player, but he could do the melodic style also and blended it very interestingly, too. So, and Butch Robbins is another example of a player that followed Monroe, or followed Bill Keith, I mean, that used both the Scruggs and Bill Keith's approach. So, you know, he was a huge, huge influence on the music, and as Neil Rosenberg said, it was revolutionary.
I think that's a real fair statement. And then we haven't even talked about, you know, the fact that he made it so we don't have to break the necks on our banjo to play Earl's breakdown. He put those, made those little tuners that.
Right. Well, that's another thing. You know, he's not only a great player, but he's an engineer and an inventor.
Yeah.
And if people are aware of the older style Scruggs tuners that even Earl Scruggs used, you had to drill holes in your headstock to install these, and it was, you know, basically after you did it, it was a permanent installment.
Right.
And Bill, through his very, very being very clever, was able to build inside the normal tuning peg some geared things that allowed the peg to be turned and stopped at certain locations. And you just use the normal hole that is already there for the pegs. So he did that and has run that business, I think he said, now for 50 years.
Golly.
So it's been a long time.
And the neat thing about it, if you have a set of them, Alan, well, you know this, and you mail them back to Bill, he'll redo them all and put them all back together for, like, I don't know, $10, $5, $10, whatever, and you get a hole.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he is... stands behind his product 110%,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. Wow. So that's great. Well, that was thank you for sharing that. I wanted to talk to you.
Sure.
Because I wanted to talk to you about the new album, but I also thought, gosh, I want to talk to Alan about getting chosen and being able to present.
Oh,
this,
yeah.
Kind
it
of
was
bill.
A
what a cool
thrill
thing.
For me.
Oh, what
for
a
sure.
Cool thing. Neat. Very well. Very well done, I think. And a good person to pick it, so to speak. No pun intended. In the summer, you sent me this new album, Bright Monday, and which it's mandolin. I don't, you know, I was trying to think the other day, Alan. I don't know that I have another album of just banjo and mandolin. The thing you and Sam did? It's on vinyl. I don't listen to it. Weren't there other instruments in the?
The whole band.
That's
we did one or two tunes. We did one tune. I think it was Howdy in Hickman County. That was just mandolin and banjo.
Yeah.
And certainly fiddle and banjo have been done.
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't think I have another. I may have, but I don't know that I have another album of like this Bright Monday, which is you and Billy Bright, mandolin and banjo tunes from top to bottom. I don't think.
Oh, right. Yeah, it was interesting to do and for me, and I hope for him, I think it was. And it led to a lot of creative things that I'm very, very proud of and like the music on it a lot.
Well, let's take a minute and talk about the album. I've got it right in front of me, and I've played it quite a bit. And I play it on the show often, I need you to help me describe how you choose these tunes a little bit, because I take notes about these things. I mean, here's an up tempo, here's kind of a not, and then I can't really describe these tunes in a way that people can understand what I'm saying, because I'm just not that bright. But tell me a little about it. You don't have to go song for song, but tell me what you were doing with Billy Bright putting this album together and how you chose the tunes.
Well, basically, I had some tunes I had written, and Billy had some tunes that he had written and we just shared them, and if we liked them, we did them. You know, I wished I could say that there was a great plan to it, but it was, other than we did try to organize it to where there were some up-tempo tunes mm-hmm. and then some sort of actually slow tunes. We did, I think, three waltzes on here.
Yes.
And Billy is younger than I am. I'll confess, I'm 68. And Billy, I think, is in his 40s. And he's played music a long, long time and has sort of a younger sensibility about him, although he's very, very tradition-oriented in a lot of ways. He can play wild and crazy stuff, but he has a real strong sense of the tradition and certainly Monroe's playing.
Yeah, okay.
And so he brought a lot of that to it, even though it's on some newer tunes. And we did, actually, the only tune on here we wrote together is the very first cut on the CD, which is called Geezer Ride. And I basically had the idea, and he organized it and came up with the B part, and actually even some things in the A part to make it what it is. And he also has when there's only two of you playing, after a while, I mean, if you just did it in a certain way, it would go like this. The banjo kicks it off, the mandolin takes the first break, the banjo takes the next break, the mandolin takes the third break. You know, it could, or the mandolin kicks it off, yeah. And then the banjo takes a break, and then the mandolin plays again. Which there is that on here. But he also has an ear for arranging things, and not in big ways, but just in little ways that break up that sort of flow of thing. Like on this Geezer Ride, he starts it, I play it, he plays it again, I play it, and then the last time through, I play the melody, but he plays this thing that I think of as sort of a round, you know, like row, row, row your boat.
Okay, yeah.
Where I play the lick, and then he comes in behind me and plays the same sort of thing, but he made it all work through that, so that was real good. And then sometimes we play things in unison. He'll learn my tune, or I'll learn his tune, and we'll play it in unison, and then split apart and play more normal solo accompaniment kind of thing.
Well,
a huge variety of stuff the two of us, I think.
It is, and for the two instruments involved, when you're listening to it, I'm not aware that there's only two instruments. That's not, you know,
right.
To me, because it's very tasteful. Like when you're playing a lead part, or he's playing, you're kind of playing behind him. You're not just doing, sometimes you're doing things that are more recognizable to someone like me, but your playing is very complementary to each other. And I just think, well, there's not a lot of empty space. I mean, it's not that every space has to be filled, but I just think that when you listen to it, you're not even really aware that it's just two instruments being played. I think it's really, really well executed, I guess. That's a horrible word.
Well, thank you very much. You know, and since you're a jazzer guy too, we did this tune of mine called Hot Dog Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say that it's anywhere near to the quality of these people that I mentioned, but to me, towards the end of it, I always loved Paul Desmond and whoever he played with. You know, he played with a lot of different people.
Oh, yeah.
Ted Baker and Dave Brubeck and Jerry Mulligan and all these.
Yeah.
And they all had sort of a quality about them of, you know, one instrument plays and the other instrument sort of is a counterpoint to it. And this Hot Dog Dreams, ultimately, we sort of slip into something similar to that. Now, I don't want to in any way say that it's up to that caliber, but it's that sensibility in my mind. So I love that tune, Hot Dog Dreams,
yeah.
Because it's 5 minutes and 5.5 minutes long, but towards the end of it, it drifts into this sort of counterpoint accompaniment sort of thing that is mostly Billy's doing. I'm just playing, and he's the one that is sort of having to make it work, but he does it really well. You know, I'm real thrilled that I could be on this.
When I have a chance, Alan, to talk to someone like you, and I kind of make just little scribbles. My notes are just little scribbles, and that was one of the things that I recognized from my horrible handwriting is that I'd written down hot dog dreams. So now you've talked about that, which I didn't have the questions that you just answered, but I was curious about the tune, so that's good. It's like it's 5.5 minutes long that you said, and boy, it's just everything about this, it all fits together so well. I think I told you off the air that I met Billy up at Grey Fox, and
right.
I was broadcasting up there, and I put together that as they're announcing people from Wood and Wire, I believe is his band. I thought it's got to be. How many guys named Bright from Texas? And I didn't hear the first name, so I went and talked to him. And here's what I thought about some of his mandolin playing. To me, as you describe Bill Keith and his very distinctive sounds, I've talked with you on the show and also in person about the notes that you choose, which I think are instantly recognized. There's a different type of a hesitation, and I can't describe it, but it's like I know what. But also your slides, I think, are very – I think the slides that you use are very – recognizable, and I felt like the mandolin was playing a lot of the banjo slides. Matter of fact, if it weren't for the fact that you could tell the difference in the instruments themselves, sometimes I listen to this if it's late at night and I'm driving, I'm thinking, wait a minute, was that Alan playing, or was that Billy playing that slide? I mean, do you know what I'm trying to say? Did you? I actually asked him about that, and he said that you kind of helped him get some of those slides.
Right. You know, it's interesting you caught that, but. And I can't remember what tune, you know, it may vary from tune to tune. And as we would rehearse these things, you know, one of the things that you learn to do as a musician, I think, is you can play and listen at the same time, which seems like an odd thing to say. But, you know, I can play and be doing all that I can do, but I can still hear what Billy's doing. And every once in a while, I would have this long, and it wasn't even a purposeful slide necessarily. It was just a slide that was an artifact of playing and then moving my finger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, you know, it'd be really cool if you could sort of get that also. So we would actually even, on the tunes that it mattered that,
right.
that I noticed or he noticed, we would even rehearse and try to get the slides.
Okay, I'm glad I wasn't imagining that, because I do that often.
Oh, no. It was we talked about not everything.
No.
You know, they're just here and there. But
right.
It is interesting that you would pick up on that. I'm glad. I'm really happy because, you know, I thought it sounded cool.
It did sound cool. And I said, that's a deliberate thing, unless, you know, it just was osmosis being in the same place with you. But I tell you the reason I do it is I do recognize your style, and not just your notes, but there's a timing issue with when you go into slides, and I can't express it, but there's something very unique about your timing issues. We've tried to discuss, does it come from Texas swing? I don't know where it comes from, but I recognize it when I hear it. Maybe it's because for all those years I was, as I told you, you're the one that put me through law school because I realized I can't really do this.
Right.
So I went to law school instead. But that's good. Okay, good. I like to think I can actually hear some of those things.
Oh, yeah. No, you picked up on a real sort of a nuance in the music,
okay,
for sure. That's
good.
Cool.
This is the album, there's like 13 tunes. As I look through the list, I'm sitting here today going back over it again, and I look at the tune Tumblin', and I'm thinking, well, it's not really like Rumblin' Tumblin' or Rollin' and Tumblin'. It's kind of a pretty, there's a lot of pretty, gosh, I could almost see you guys, which is weird to think of you, I don't know Billy, but I could almost see you guys like in a concert hall on stage, with, you know, with playing some of these really nice slower pieces. They almost seem like... you could be on stage in tuxes, which I don't think you wear a lot of tuxes, but some of these things.
No.
Not in a while.
Not in forever.
Not forever. You know what I mean?
I've
some of these almost have like a classical comp feel to them.
Well, sure. You know, he wrote this waltz called Plurabelle.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in this. I asked him about the name, and he says his wife's name is Anna. But this is her middle name.
Plurabelle, really?
And apparently her dad was either an English professor or an English aficionado of literature. And I believe he told me Anna Plurabelle is a character in James Joyce's Finnegan's Rainbow.
Oh.
Finian. What is it? Finian's Rainbow? I think it is.
I think it could be Finian's.
But anyway, that's his wife's middle name is Plurabelle, which is when I do that in the on the computer, the spell checker wants to fix it. So it must not be a very common name.
I've never heard it. Yeah, okay.
I never had either, but that's where the name comes from. Anyway, it's a sort of a real, it's a waltz, but it's real, I want to use the word strict. You know, the melody notes are all, many of them, I should say, are, you know, just one, two, three, one, two, three. You know, there's no subtle, too many subtle changes. So it sounds kind of strict, like a classical piece. And the way I heard it as an accompanist, I never played the melody on it. It's just, he plays a what is the next one up from mandola?
Oh, yeah.
And he plays a mandola
on it.
And it just, and I so play, I play these sort of moving classical sounding to me. I mean, in real.
That's what it sounds like to me.
That. And I remember some, we played a wedding one time and somebody wanted Pachelbel's Canon.
Pachelbel.
Which is similar, but we played this instead and they never noticed.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, that's good. All right, so that's what I kept thinking. I could see you guys, I didn't think about a wedding, but yeah, okay, that would make
right.
Sense.
And,
yeah.
And then Sad Eyes
is
a tune
sad.
That I wrote, which is a waltz also.
Mm-hmm.
And he accompanies me the whole way, although he joins in the very last time and plays the melody in unison. But it's more of a chordal kind of thing that was I wrote several years ago. And I want to say for all the dog lovers out there, the title comes from every time the dogs are hungry.
Okay.
We have three dogs.
Okay.
And that's what I would say. Oh, it's look at all those sad eyes. So
as long as you feed them when they have sad eyes, we're good.
Right. No, those sad eyes go away real quick.
Right. Well, I tell you, I could. I don't want you to have to go through every one of these, but now I think the people listening, as we're talking to Alan Mundy about Bright Monday, this album is just there's so much great interplay between you and Billy. And the tunes you've just been talking about, to me, that gives you a good example. We've hit on some that and there are some up-tempo tunes if someone just wants to hear, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's some up-tempo stuff.
Yeah, we do Methodist Preacher, which is a Bill Monroe tune,
yeah.
And Jaybird, which
Jaybird.
Is a traditional tune. I've got a fast sort of blues banjo tune called Everybody Say Wow.
Yep, that's what I wrote that. Mm-hmm.
Billy's got Red Fox in the Bush and Who Killed the Shanghai Rooster.
Right.
So there's a lot of good picking.
That's great. I mean,
I should also like to mention, just for me, you know, my big deal growing up playing, you know, there's Bill Keith and Earl Scruggs, but the Dillards were real inspirational to me, and I always loved the sound of Doug Dillard's banjo and Dean Webb's mandolin playing. They never did any, you know, just the two of them playing, but a lot of the tunes they did, you know, instrumental-wise, there was only two of them, the banjo and the mandolin. And those tunes, like on their live album, one of them's called Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really, really a wonderful musical experience from beginning to end, not just because of the tune necessarily, which is a great tune, but it's just the interaction between Dean and Doug as they play was real inspirational to me. So in the way in the back of my mind, I had that sound.
Okay. Yeah.
Not that we reproduced it here at all, but just that we tried to,
yeah.
You know, it was a sound that I'd always loved.
Well, I really think anyone who's interested in any kind of instrument at all or any kind of great music, to me, this is just, I just listen to it over. Of course, you know, I'm when I got it first couple of weeks. I think it was before I went up, drove up to New York. I listened to it. That's a long drive for me, longer for you. But I just listened to it over and over and over, and I just love the interplay. I think it's done so well. I didn't know how old Billy Bright was, but when I met him, he was very conscious of what was trying to be done, and that was good that you both were on the same page. And I just think it's great. I mean, I just really enjoy all the. Plus, it's a really nice recording. You sound good on this one. Not that you ever sound bad, but it's a good recording.
Right. Well, good. Billy recorded it.
Okay.
He was the recording engineer.
Okay.
And he would push the button, and we would play.
Well, there you go. Keep it simple.
It worked out real well, and I should put in another plug for Billy because a lot of these tunes that I have anyway, I've had for a few years, and I try to introduce them to other players, and it never seemed to make as much sense as when Billy heard them and played with me. He seemed to understand what was going on and what it took to make it work and added things to it, you know, either do it a little faster, do it a little slower, kinds of things that, and he was played well enough, and a lot of my tunes wind up being sort of chord heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a fair number of chords in there, and he was real good at making those work on the mandolin and understood them, and so I can't give him enough credit for sort of guiding me through this project. He was real good. Very gentle with me.
Very gentle. The band that he plays with, Wood and Wire, they don't play this type of sound.
No. They're a young,
yeah,
younger bunch.
Mm-hmm. And a good band. I mean, I enjoyed listening to them. But this is
This is not what.
So Billy's got that, and he's got this other side to him that you described.
Yeah. He's plus, you know, if you ever come across him, and you can get him from Billy, is he had a band for several years called the Two High String Band.
Okay.
And they put out three or four CDs that are all full of wonderful tunes that he's written. And had a career unto himself. Plus, you know, for several years he played with Tony Rice and Peter Rowan when they toured.
I did not catch that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and of course we have no idea what he looks like because there's this scary picture on the front of the Bright Monday, which is the two of you sort
of
mashed together. Yeah, yeah.
I always tell people it's a drunk test. If you're drunk enough, you can separate the pictures.
No, nobody can be that drunk and be awake.
I guess not. I'm just teasing. Please don't try that.
Don't try that. You've got this on Monday's Child Records.
Right.
And, of course, they can get this at the Al Mundy's BanjoCollege.com.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. There's also a tab. You still do this for us out here struggling in the dark. There's a book of tablature that you've done for the.
Yeah, I sit and wrote it all out. The hang up is that it's in my handwriting because I haven't blasted into the 1980s yet. I haven't learned to work those complicated tab programs. So one of these days I will. So it's in my handwriting, but it's all there.
I will, when I'm feeling ambitious, I don't like to overwhelm myself, but I'll find that and add that to my other stuff and peruse through it and learn some tunes in there, little bits of it, because I do enjoy it so much. So, Alan, this has been great, man. Thanks for being available. Were you playing with Slim here, Slim Ritchie, recently?
I did a, every year there is an event in Kerrville, Texas, which is about 80 or 90 miles from where he and I live. And he does this event, and it's basically Texas Heritage Outdoor Fair that's attended by many people, but a lot of school children. And Slim has past several years played there, and the people he usually does it with couldn't be there this year, so he got me to go over and we banged out some tunes, both some jazz tunes and some bluegrass tunes, and played what in Texas is called Jesse Polka.
Jesse Polka.
Which I believe the original title was Jesusita in Chihuahua. which was supposedly Pancho Villa's marching song.
Okay.
And in Texas, they play it as a fiddle tune, and a lot of the fiddle players play it. When they call for a polka, they play a tune called Jesse Polka.
Okay.
That's supposedly the origin of it. So we played that a lot. Slim Lowe's doing sorts of things like that.
He's quite a guy.
There's
not any other like him. Of course, you know that way better, but just from my short experience with dealing with him and hearing his records. And I think within the last year, he got a banjo or something. Is that?
Right. He plays a six-string banjo.
Yeah, okay, all right, okay. Okay. Anyway, that would be nice for you to. I'd like to get out there to hear him and hear you drop by too, just from all the stuff that I knew he did years ago with your recordings.
Right.
Just good, fun stuff, man. I really enjoy talking to you every time I can, and this gave me a good excuse to give you a holler. And the Bill Keith thing too. This has been great. I've enjoyed speaking with you again.
Excellent. Well, it's been good talking to you. All I appreciate right. you playing the CD enjoying it, and I hope some of your listeners find something on there
they do. You know, I was talking to Sam Bush. I finally tricked him into being on the show, and he says he's got. We were talking about the album you did with him, Alone or whatever. I forget. There's so many different variations of Alone Together or Together for the First Time.
Right. It's Together Again for the First Time was the name of it.
He swears he's got tapes from that.
You know, for several years now, I've been trying to get our album re-released.
Yeah.
And I've sent it all to him, and he's trying to get it prepared and get it out. But he's a very busy man and hasn't gotten around to it yet.
Well,
I hope someday, before too very long, we'll see the light of day again.
And I'm not trying to point fingers. I just want to get it done. So I figure if I can create this, you know, this buzz, as they say, I get this buzz of having this thing re-released, and I know that I would love to hear
anybody out there, if you go see Sam Bush, just say to him, "Oh, I hear you're going to re-release the Sam and Alan album." And he'll go, "Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to be working on that."
Okay. That'll work. Then we'll create a groundswell, and it'll come out finally.
Right.
All right, cool. All right, Alan, listen, man, I appreciate you being available, and I'll let you get back about your business. And, man, I've enjoyed so much talking to Alan Mundy. It's my favorite player. I say it in front of everybody. I'm not hiding it. If I could play banjo, that would be the one I would do. So, all right, man, take care. I'll talk to you again soon.
Steve.
All right, bye.
Bye.